Carolyn. How's it going?
Hello. It's so going. Not only are you going to introduce me to somebody that you had the opportunity to speak with before and see her exhibit in person, but she's also in Ottawa.
Yes, she is. I'm excited that we're going to chat with Ruth Steinberg today. Ruth Steinberg is a phenomenal photographer. And yes, we have to give a shout out to the fabulous Sadie, who is our producer for the podcast, who came across Ruth's work on Instagram and connected us with it and said, hey, this might be somebody you want to talk about. So kudos, Sadie, for always being on top of the cool things that are happening.
That's right. We do wish to speak with Ruth today.
We do. And I, as you will hear, I had a chance to actually go and see the exhibit. I was down in Ottawa for some work that I do with the Canadian Grief Alliance. And so made sure that I got to go and actually be in the art space and to feel some of the things that we're going to talk about. And unfortunately, by the time we're recording this podcast, the exhibit has closed, but that doesn't mean you can't access Ruth Steinberg's website. We'll link to that in our show notes so that you can check out some of these fabulous pictures that we are talking about. So Carrie, I think we better get that conversation happening.
Let's get it going.
Ruth, we are so glad you could join us today. I'm so excited to speak with you. I, as you know, had a chance to visit your fabulous exhibit and learned a little bit about your friend Alma and was amazed by the photographs. And so thank you for carving out some time to talk with us. And so I'm interested about how you got into photography and thinking about what photography allows you. And we did our homework and saw in your bio that photography allows you to enter into worlds that are different from your own. So what was it about Alma's world that was different from your own, and how did that start?
Well, I mean, Alma was not a new acquaintance. I lived across the street from Alma for 27 years. And the first few years, she was still a very active woman. She was in, at that point, maybe her late 60s, early 70s. And so we saw each other coming and going. And, you know, I was also almost 30 years younger. So I wasn't so interested in keeping up with a 60, 70-year-old woman. I had, you know, my own peer group. But when I started getting into photography, both of us had slowed down at that point. And she's just such a fabulous woman, and with a fabulous face and a fabulous energy. And she had posed for the art school here, for the Ottawa School of Art, some years before. So was very comfortable with her body and with nudity. And the very first time I photographed her, I was doing some part-time studies at the photography school. But when I went into full-time studies, I did a series of nudes with her, which at the time she was about 91. So it was quite controversial when the portfolio show came up and there's this nude of Alma. And what that did for me was really spur on my interest about photographing seniors. Because the response from many of the viewers was disgust, which totally blew my mind. Like, why am I showing an old lady body? Because we're not used to seeing that. We're used to seeing young, nubile bodies. So from there, my interest in making seniors visible, that became a kind of obsession. And I've done now three projects around issues of seniors living as an elderly person, the project on my mom. Then I did a series of nudes where Alma also was featured. And then, of course, Alma's story. So that's how Alma and I connected photographically, but well before that as well.
Wonderful to hear about Alma. And I want to do a quick shout out because you live in Ottawa, which is the place of my birth. And Ottawa is a very special city for me. I want to follow on with what you've shared, Ruth, and tell you that my reaction to seeing your exhibition virtually, I didn't get a chance to see it in Ottawa proper, is that there's such a poignancy in the simplicity and the fact that you have raw and realness in the photographs of Alma and the photographs of, I'm presuming, her partner or friend in one of them, etc. And again, you know, we're talking about a woman in her 90s. But to zero in on this latest exhibition around the topic of Alma's choice to have medical assistance in dying, were these photographs taken organically? You discuss in the accompanying video that, you know, you would go back the next day, etc. So perhaps you could tell us a little bit about when and how you took the photographs. And also, what kind of input Alma herself had in the way the photographs were taken?
Well, as I previously mentioned, I had been photographing Alma and her late husband, Wiley, but more so Alma, for about 10 years. And while she was able to see the photographs, she was very much a participant in terms of seeing the end result. And she really loved my way of photographing because I'm not trying to make things pretty. I don't want to invoke pity because Alma's not a woman to be pitied. But I do want to talk about the reality of being a woman in your 90s. And so some of the details in the photographs speak to that, what the reality of life was for her. So photographing her was not new. And she had been talking about MAID. She had mentioned MAID even when Wiley was alive. But Wiley died in June of 2019. And that's when the issue for MAID became very clear to Alma. And her only concern about it was knowing when would be the right time. And she was very wrapped up in that question. When would she know? How would she know? And because she felt uncertain about that, that's the only time she, in my mind, was unhappy with the state of her life, not being able to see and not being able to do the things that she had previously enjoyed. But once she settled on MAID, and it was really a year later, June of 2020, we had scattered Wiley's ashes in the river. And around that time, she said, you know what, I woke up this morning and I decided I want to have MAID in the fall. And immediately her spirits lifted because she kind of had her destination and she was prepared. And when she told me that, my first reaction was, oh my God, I'm only going to have so much more time with you. And I said, can I continue to photograph you? And she said, yes. And it wasn't necessarily to do a project, but I wanted as much time with her. And she loved being photographed. She was a ham, for sure. And she loved it. And it was there. When you're working that closely with someone, there's an intimacy that's very special. And oftentimes, visits would be to make photographs or visits would be to have conversations. And so it was a very organic process. She couldn't see what I was doing, but she was very much a willing participant and very curious about the whole thing. And I would tell her, okay, I need to go upstairs to your bedroom. I want to do some details. And so she'd come up and join me. And she'd say, what are you photographing? And I would tell her. I mean, she could sort of see, but she couldn't really see. So she was very much a collaborator. She didn't suggest poses, but she also never said no to anything I suggested, including the final image in the show of her lying in the leaves, which is crazy when you think about it. She's 97 years old. It's bloody cold outside. I'm asking her to lie down in a park in leaves. And she didn't hesitate for a minute. So she was very much on board.
I bet. And I have to say, when I was walking through the exhibit, that was the sense I had, was one of deep and trusting friendship, but also a high level of respect. And if I can circle back to some of the comments you were making earlier about how it's unusual to see photographs of a 90-something-year-old woman nude, but also in a vulnerable state. There's a very powerful one of her lying in bed, which to me was, it felt so normal, but also powerful in its normalcy, right? And intimate because you had the opportunity to glimpse that. And I, of course, read through the guest book, and there were a lot of Alma's friends and fans, if we can call it that, who had seen her, which I loved kind of getting to know her a little bit better through those comments. people would say in their comments about how you did right by Alma. That might not be an exact quote, but that was the message. And I thought that really also came out as someone who hadn't met either of you. The sense of respect in the photographs and care for each other was definitely there.
And, you know, it was so, I was quite nervous actually putting up the show. Not that I didn't believe in the work, but that Alma had such a rich and full life and knew people from so many different aspects of her life, whether it was Raging Grannies or street theater or feminist books, you know, or her canoe trips, all that stuff. And so I didn't want to presume that this is Alma. This is my relationship with Alma. And what I was worried about is people would see what I interpreted as how Alma was for me and say, that's not Alma. So I was really gratified when people did tell me, yeah, that's my experience of Alma too. Different in that we did different things than what you did. But the Alma energy and honesty and her practicality, that's the Alma that they knew too.
And her strength to be brave and to share in that way so that someone like me, who is actively aging, can get a sense and imagine what is it like to be that comfortable in your skin and feel that connected to someone that you want to leave a legacy in that way. And I think that's sensational. Yeah.
And for Alma, her whole life was built around social justice and activism. And one of the reasons she was ready for MAID was that she could no longer participate. She couldn't write because she couldn't see the keyboard. She was not strong enough to walk up to Parliament Hill anymore and protest. There were a lot of things that were no longer available to her to be an activist for social justice. So this opportunity to, once we realized, oh, wow, we're developing something here. We're developing something significant. What do we do about it? She really was excited at that idea and about doing the audio recording. The idea for the video only happened after she died. But doing the audio recording, because as she says in the video, I want to tell people about this. And it was her last opportunity to be a social activist. So, which kind of, I think, is extraordinary that to her last breath, she was true to her values and her commitments and to what mattered to her.
You get an incredible sense of Alma. And again, I'm going to touch on that word that you used, Ruth, values. You know, what made Alma tick, but also what made her a fervent social justice warrior? And why was that so important to her, even leading up to her death? We, in our studies, Kathy and I do something called digital storytelling. And we believe in the work that we do, in the power of the story and the power of the story to translate for the viewer. What is so interesting about what you're saying is that Kathy and I also believe that process, I mean, you've talked about spending those moments with Alma and collaborating and making those choices as a unit, you know, respectfully and purposefully. But you also kind of said something interesting just then about the product itself. So posthumously, Ruth continues her social justice activism in your exhibition, right? In her ability to say, you know, this is something that I co-collaborated with Ruth, and here it is, and take from it what you will, because this is it in its raw and real form. But this is my story to tell. You know, so incredible to think that story then takes on a life of its own.
And, you know, it's funny when we were setting up the exhibit and, you know, I had obviously seen and heard the video that I made from time to time, but not for a long time. You make it, you view it, you put it away. And so when we set up the exhibition, we did a sound check on the video. Just hearing Alma's voice fill the room was quite overwhelming. It really was. I felt her presence so strongly. It took me a moment to, of course, I knew that she was dead. It's not like, oh, here's Alma in the room, but it really, her presence was so very vital that it kind of took me aback.
I can only imagine, because when I heard her voice in the setting with the photographs as well, it was very powerful too. And I had gone to the exhibit with my fabulous sister-in-law. And she, when she first heard the voice, she went and found and stopped. And it was like, wow, to be in that space, to see the pictures, and then to hear the voice was a powerful piece. And so I'm wondering, Ruth, did honoring your relationship and a piece of Alma's story, how has that changed your own thinking about dying and death and loss and grief?
I think Alma's was the most beautiful death, quite honestly. I assisted a friend, not through Maid, because Maid wasn't available then, but I assisted her in her last year of life. And it was a very challenging year emotionally, for sure. And then a very dear friend of mine, a former professor who became a friend, chose Maid but had to go to Europe because she was an applied linguistics professor. So language and words were her everything. And she developed a form of dementia, Alzheimer's, that affected her speech center. And for her, she could not, her self-concept would not allow her to continue on unable to communicate with people. Of course, in Canada, we don't have the advanced directive opportunity. And so she decided for Maid because she wanted to live with a particular quality of life, and she wouldn't compromise that. And there was a real sadness for me about that, as well as her other friends, because we literally had a going away party 2 weeks before she got on the plane. And there she was, vibrant and very alive. She had lost some capacity, but not a lot. And so for her to get on a plane and not come back, there was such a disconnect with that. And I respected her wish to die on her own terms and with her sense of self intact. That was really important. My sister-in-law had Maid 6 months after Alma. And again, that was a blessing because she was terminally ill and they were unable to manage her pain. And so grateful that she didn't have to spend an extra week or days or months with that kind of pain and no relief. And then a week ago, this very day, another friend chose Maid because she, again, was at the very end of her life. Chemo had failed. The cancer had spread. She was not in good shape. And so she was able to leave knowing that some work she was developing had moved forward. She had family with her. It was peaceful. And the suffering was over. So I don't have a sense of what happens in the afterlife the way that Alma did. I don't. For me, when the body dies, I'm not sure about what happens to the spiritual energy or any of that stuff. But I do know we all die. And to deny that fact is to inflict endless pain on oneself. And so I've really come to accept my time will come. I've had two cancer events myself where I really felt my mortality. The first one, I was in my mid-40s. So suddenly I was very aware that, oh my gosh, this could happen. This could happen to me. It could happen when I don't expect it. So now it's not that I expect it. It's not that I'm looking forward to it, but I accept it. It's going to happen. It's going to happen to my mom. She's 99. Going to happen to my brother. We're all going to die. So if there's a way to do it with dignity and without suffering, I am grateful that Maid is available. I've seen too much suffering.
Thank you for all of that, and especially for your sharing of, you know, even the recent death of your friend who chose Maid. And thank you for making those connections, because I think that that really helps us understand that you included Alma's thinking that there's a difference between being alive and living. And you've really summed that up there, because the people that you love and who have died decided that they weren't necessarily living the life that they wanted to be living anymore. Alma couldn't read, therefore she couldn't write. And getting to Parliament Hill to protest, which I can only imagine she was there regularly before this time. That for her was a very different way of life, and it was being alive. And I think what you've done there too is said that opting for MAID in these instances was really a decision when life was really about existence and not about really thriving. And I think too, what's curious about that too is that, again, I'm going to circle back to that idea of, you know, you saying, here's what happens, you know, take from this exhibit what you will. Perhaps you could tell us about your thinking process or your conceptual process about how people would view the exhibition and what you really wanted your audience to have as takeaways. Kathy and I often talk about digital storytelling, and what are the things that the creator wants the audience to really sit with? What was it that you were hoping people would sit with when they viewed Alma?
I'll answer that. I want to circle back to something you said at the beginning of this question when we talked about people choosing death when they could no longer have the kind of life or the vitality. And we had talked about this before we started the podcast, and that's my mom. And my mom, who will be 100 in April. And certainly, from my point of view, how she's living her life would not be satisfying because it's quite limited. I mean, she does go out for her walks. She's remarkably healthy, but the life is limited. And for me, maybe that wouldn't be a life that I would want to have. But it is a life that she is enjoying, that she is choosing. She would not consider MAID because she could no longer do the things that really mattered to her. She has found value in the little things that she can do. And I really want to highlight that because I don't want the listeners to think that I think MAID should be, gee, I can no longer ski downhill or, you know, all the fun stuff I used to do, so I'm getting out of here. Everybody really defines their own quality of life. And aside from the fact that she couldn't be a social activist, she was blind. She needed a lot of support. I mean, I lived across the street, so it was easy for me to go and read the labels on her medication or write things for her or take her blood pressure. There were people who took her places. She walked with a cane because her arthritis pain was significant. So it was more than just, I can no longer be a social activist. The body was giving out. And so I really want to make that distinction. But I will now answer what you asked about my own hopes or expectations. And, you know, Alma said it in the video, she just wants to make people aware. I tried very hard for this not to be a pro-MAID exhibit. I'm a photographer. I'm an artist. This is what I do. This is what my specialty is. I tell people stories. In this case, I was telling Alma's story, and Alma wanted to tell people about MAID. My own personal views about MAID, I never discussed because it's not relevant to the work I was making. It was relevant to Alma's story. And so what I wanted, what I hoped for, was that people could enter the space, have a conversation around dying and death and MAID, and really be able to not confront as in aggressively, but to come to terms with death and dying. And that MAID is one option for people under very particular circumstances, as Alma also made clear, but to kind of help us come to terms with, yes, we're all going to die. But I also didn't want it to be morbid. And I think Alma was the best ambassador for that because she loved her life. I had an interesting conversation with a friend who's a painter. And after he saw the show, he came to me and he said, I'm quite unsettled by this. And I said, what's unsettling? He said, well, I look at the photographs and she seems so happy and she seems to be enjoying her life. And yet she's choosing to die. And I said, they're not incompatible. You know, she chose her time of death. and she was going to enjoy her life, every moment of her life, until the time of her death. I thought that was a beautiful tribute to living life fully.
Oh, mic drop right there, Ruth. You know that they're not incompatible. Absolutely. But I would say one of the things that surprised me about the exhibit, as someone who thinks and reads and talks a lot about MAID and medical assistance in dying, that was just one part of the exhibit. It was, in some ways, a celebration of Alma through the photography, through people giving witness to that, through the video and through the comments in the guest book. To me, all those things were really synergistic. And it was, the message I left with was, there was a strong woman who lived life well. I love that she was a raging granny. I'm a big fan of raging grannies. I teach a gerontology course. I always show a great video. But, and so I was thinking about that, and someone for whom at the end of her life, she chose MAID. But there was so much more richness and life that occurred before that. And that for me came across really clearly. And so I'm interested, I could obviously see in the guest book what people were saying, and I could hear some of those conversations starting that I think you were hopeful that your photographs, your art would inspire in people. But what's it been like for you as the artist behind the photographers, as someone who, can I say, loved Alma and had a deep relationship with her? What's it been like sharing that with people?
Yeah, I did love Alma. You know, I look across the street at her house, which has been, you know, renovated and upgraded and all the rest. And it's still Alma's house to me. It's still very much Alma's house. And I'm so glad I have lots of images of Alma from before this project also and with Wiley. I'm really proud of the friendship I had with her. And she knew so many people in Ottawa because she has been involved in so many things. And so here was an opportunity, because when Alma died, her body was cremated, but there was no service. The ashes went to her daughter and there was no service. We had, for those of us who attended MAID, there were six of us. We got to have a lovely time with her. But there was no gathering afterwards for other people. And so I gave an artist talk, and a lot of Alma's friends attended. And that was fantastic because, again, for one thing, it reassured me that, yes, I presented her in a way that they are familiar with her too. And then they started swapping stories, and I had heard some of them, but some other ones were just hysterical. And so it really was, in a strange way, a celebration of life in this photography exhibit, which I couldn't have asked for anything better.
I can only imagine what that must have felt like. And what I think is so lovely about that too is that I think Kathy's question for me really sparked on that idea that loving Alma doesn't stop because Alma has died. Loving Alma continues because death ends a life, not a relationship, and that you have created this bond, this product, you know, through the process that you went through in, you know, that first photography project and then in the subsequent one where she had, you know, set the date that she wanted to have MAID. I think what's also I really appreciate, and this isn't really a question, it's just more of a statement, is I really liked, Ruth, that you took us back to this idea that help our listeners and myself really understand that MAID is not an extreme decision in the sense where I cannot, you know, throw myself down a zip line. So, but I could, you know, 25 years ago. So let's end this show, because I think we're inundated in, you know, in our media and all sorts of outlets. So many of our guests have shared with us that this decision-making is heavy and laden with thoughtfulness and purpose and really thinking about what all of this means. And you sharing that is really important, because it also goes back to a conversation Kathy and I had with another guest about how her father chose me, also a social justice activist. And it was a decision that he really actively pursued right up until really the day before he had the procedure, or what Stephanie Green calls he was delivered using MAID. So I think that's a really important point, and I really thank you for contributing that.
You're welcome. Yeah. I mean, I was present for part of Alma's first assessment. I asked her permission, and she asked the doctor agreed, and they wanted some time privately at first. And lucky for Alma, the first assessor also happened to be her family doctor. So they already had a wonderful relationship. And it was her family doctor who kept reassuring Alma, don't worry about the date. You will know. You don't have to arbitrarily choose something. At some point, you will know. And that is the experience Alma had. But when I did join them, I was struck by the compassion of the doctor, how thoughtful the questions were. I mean, sure, she followed a questionnaire, the standard questionnaire, but she went beyond that. And I imagine every assessor does, depending on where the conversation takes them. This is serious stuff. This is a very serious topic. You want to assess why someone willingly lets go of life. What's behind that? Is it depression? Is it sadness? Is there conviction? Is there pain? Are you feeling coerced? Are you all of those things? And it's so important to tease that out. And that's what I was struck by. It was a really beautiful and respectful conversation. The doctor was thoroughly convinced by Alma and impressed by Alma. And I have to say, even on the day of the MAID service, I mean, they are, of course, obliged before they start the procedure to ask again. But before that, Alma and the doctor went up to the kitchen to sign some papers, and they asked me if I would come up to witness. And again, the doctor said to Alma, don't have to do this. You know, really, you can change your mind and no one would be angry with you. No one would be upset. And Alma was very clear about it. There was no tears. There was no, oh, I don't know, maybe I'm making a mistake. She was so clear, which for me as her friend was deeply reassuring that she was going into this wholeheartedly.
And that is a beautiful gift to receive as someone who loves someone who is choosing MAID, to know that they are going in, to use your word, wholeheartedly. And I think it's hearing stories like that helps to deepen our understanding around MAID. And Ruth, you've been interviewed by a couple of different media outlets, but I really appreciated your interview with CBC. And you spoke about your experiences having heard from some people who weren't really clear on their position around MAID. But having been to your exhibit, learning about Alma and hearing her in the video, they changed their thoughts about that. How do you think your art of the photographs of Alma helps people to think deeper about things?
Well, I think because it's about an individual, and you get to witness that particular person, their life, how they live, the day-to-day activities. So it's no longer a concept. It's not, you know, the idea of MAID that one debates pro or con. It's about being present to a woman and how she's living the last final months of her life with great joy and as much purpose as she can. Knowing that she's chosen for herself to leave this life on her terms and with great dignity. So I think when people see that, it opens a door to thinking differently, that we're not killing off the elderly, you know, but that here's one example. What do you think? What do you consider about that? And as I said earlier, I'm not trying to convince anybody. That wasn't my purpose. My purpose was to honor my friend and to honor what it is to live as a 97-year-old knowing that you're going to die and what makes a good quality of life. And, you know, those last 5 months of her life were good quality. However limited and however dependent she was, she had a beautiful life. In fact, she was supposed to, her original date for MAID was October 30th. And towards the end, I guess about 2 or 3 weeks before then, she said, I have to extend it because ever since people heard that I was dying, everyone wants to go out with me and I'm having so much fun. And she had things she wanted to put in place to make it easier for her surviving daughter. So she waited another week. And it wasn't, I'm not sure about this as much as, gee, I'm having a party right now and I'm enjoying my life right now. So let me have every last crumb of it before I close the door.
I think that's so lovely because it really, again, emphasizes her point about the difference between what brought quality to her life. And I think what you mentioned about how that can change depending upon the context in which we find ourselves, you know? What I really loved about what you just shared, Ruth, is the idea that your project was able to give the viewer an opportunity to turn a concept or an idea and humanize it, because there was Alma and the months preceding her having MAID and this opportunity to meet her and hear her and really get to know her in the context of the fact that she had chosen to use medical assistance in dying. And I think that's, again, speaks to that value of the human story in helping convey those things. What's next for you, Ruth? Where do you think you and your photography will take you next?
Well, after I finished the project with Alma, I had been photographing my mom ongoingly since 2015. And it was really important for me to honor her. And she's still alive, thank you, and enjoying her life. But it was important for me because Alma was getting a lot of my attention. And my mom was very supportive of that. And I didn't want my mom to feel that my love for Alma in any way supplanted my love for her. And also, my mom has a very different story from Alma's. I think they were about 6 months apart, or maybe the same age. Alma was November, and my mom is April. So pretty darn close in age. But my mom has good vision. Her hearing is terrible. But she manages even with her hearing aids. She's far more mobile. She uses a walker now because she had a couple of falls. So physically, she's more robust. And it's not that she had fewer expectations of what her life should mean, because she was a geriatric social worker by profession. So she did a lot of very good work in her life. But she doesn't feel the need, I don't think, to be a banner waver or anything like that. She's quite content to live a simpler life and a good life. And I felt it was really important for people who tend to pigeonhole what seniors and the elderly are like, because what we're getting in the media is either very sad stories of seniors with dementia, or we're getting what I call the advertisements for retirement centers, where everybody is smiling, has very nice capped teeth and pearls, and they're raising a glass. And I'm thinking, well, I'm sure there are people who are like that too, but there's an awful lot more in a different place, and we don't see that. And again, it's kind of like my mission is to pull the curtain back and allow younger people to imagine. Just like they might imagine their death, as in the Alma show, but to imagine what it might be like for them to be older, what that really is like. And so much like the photographs of Alma, the photographs of my mom are not romanticized. I don't have mom in an apron at the cookie sheet because she stopped baking years ago. And a lot of the images are quite, you know, stationary because she does a lot of sitting now. She's 99, for Pete's sakes. But she reads and she's engaged and she goes for walks. And this is another reality that we need to acknowledge and see, because it's not evident in our culture. We tend to shy away from death. We tend to shy away from aging.
We do, unfortunately. But it's exhibits like the one you've been talking about, and I'm hopeful that there are others coming down that you will pull back the curtain so that we can learn in different ways about voices and people who are living real lives that we don't have the privilege to learn about. So, Ruth, I want to say thank you very much for using your artistry as a photographer to help us to see things and to be challenged in different ways and to understand the beauty that there is as living well until you die. So thanks so much for joining our podcast this evening. I have really enjoyed our time together.
Oh, me too. It was a wonderful conversation. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ruth. It's been such a pleasure. And please give our best to your mom. We look forward to exhibits.
I have to find a venue first. Then we'll talk.
That's great. Oh, thank you so very much, Ruth.
Kathy, what an incredible opportunity to speak with Ruth Steinberg.
I know I've had a couple of conversations with Ruth now, and each time I'm struck by how lucky we are to have artists in our world. People who can see the humanness of life and communicate that to us in a way that holds on to you in a different way than a research study does, or I hate to say a podcast, but those art pieces. Like, I can close my eyes and I can see the picture of Alma lying in the leaves.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think that's so true. And I think that ability, again, that humanness, or the putting a face to what Ruth said, was, you know, really just an abstract kind of concept, as she was saying, you know, something we debate about, the right to do this and the right to do that. And suddenly we see Alma's beautiful face and the joy that she's expressing in those months leading up to her death. And also this idea that here we've got this raw and real, expose, really, of what it looks like to be 97, living your best life until you die.
And I also thought, what a beautiful way to honor a friendship. You know, I think COVID has changed the way that we engage in social mourning, but we're also shifting that as a society in terms of coming together and honoring someone. And I love when she talked about how, when she did her artist talk, that's when people came out to share their stories. Because we want to do that as human beings. We want to talk about how people touched us and what they meant to us after they've died. Hopefully we're doing some of that before they die, of course. But we also need the opportunity to do that in groups after people died.
And I think you're absolutely right. And what I love about that in particular is that human beings are creative beings. And when we are forced, global pandemic, to really think about new and innovative ways to celebrate a life, we find those new ways. And we say, well, sure, we might not all gather at Turner and Porter. This is not an advertisement for Turner and Porter funeral homes. But we might be able to sort of celebrate somebody in a sense because we're now in this venue and we're talking about this legacy pieces, essentially, that Alma has left us.
Agreed. So, how about let's challenge our listeners a little bit out there. If you know of somebody who is doing some legacy making, is considering accessing MAID, or has accessed MAID, and maybe friends and family want to share the story of a death that was creative, that like was choreographed in some way, that there was special food or music or some sort of connecting or ceremony that might have occurred. We'd love to hear from you. We would love to talk about what people are doing in anticipation of the end of their lives when they've accessed MAID, and how and if MAID allows for people to prepare in different ways. Please let us know. All right, until the next conversation.
Story. stories mean.